Originally, we assumed that a Kolos was a combination of two people into one. That was wrong. Kolos are not the melding of two people, but five, as evidenced by the four spikes needed to make them. Not five bodies, of course, but five souls. Each pair of spikes grants what the Chandra would call the blessing of potency. However, each spike also distorts the Kolos body a little more, making it increasingly inhuman. Such is the cost of hemallergy. 40.
Nobody knows precisely how Inquisitors are made, Elland said from the front of the tent, addressing a small group which included Ham, Set, the scribe Nurdin, and the mostly recovered Demu. Vin sat at the back, still trying to sort through what she had discovered. Human, all Kolos, they had once been people.
There are lots of theories about it, however, Elland said. Once the Lord Ruler fell, Sazed and I did some research and discovered some interesting facts from the obligators we interviewed. For instance, Inquisitors are made from ordinary men, men who remember who they were, but gain new allomantic abilities.
Our experience with Marsh proves that as well, Ham said. He remembered who he was, even after he had all of those spikes driven through his body. And he gained the powers of a Mistborn when he became an Inquisitor.
"Excuse me," Set said, "but will someone please explain what the hell this has to do with our siege of the city? There aren't any Inquisitors here."
Elland folded his arms.
"This is important, Set, because we're at war with more than just Yeomen. Something we don't understand, something far greater than those soldiers inside of Fadrix."
Set snorted.
"You still believe in this talk of doom and gods and the like?"
Nurdin, Elland said, looking at the scribe. Please tell Lord Set what you told me earlier today.
The former obligator nodded.
Well, my lord, it's like this. Those numbers relating to the percentage of people who fall ill to the mists, they're just too regular to be natural. Nature works in organized chaos, randomness on the small scale, with trends on the large scale. I cannot believe that anything natural could have produced such precise results.
What do you mean? Set asked.
Well, my lord, Nurdin said, imagine that you hear a tapping sound somewhere outside your tent. If it repeats occasionally with no exact set pattern, then it might be the wind blowing a loose flap against a pole. However, if it repeats with exact regularity, you know that it must be a person beating against a pole. You'd be able to make the distinction immediately, because you've learned that nature can be repetitive in a case like that, but not exact. These numbers are the same, my lord. They're just too organized, too repetitive to be natural. They had to have been crafted by somebody.
You're saying that a person made those soldiers sick? Set asked.
A person? No, not a person, I'd guess, Nurdin said. But something intelligent must have done it. That's the only conclusion I can draw. Something with an agenda. Something that cares to be precise.
The room fell silent.
"And this relates to the Inquisitors somehow, my lord?"
Demu asked carefully.
"It does," Elland said. "At least it does if you think as I do, which I'll admit not many people do."
"For better or for worse," Ham said, smiling.
"Nurdin, what do you know of how Inquisitors are made?" Elland asked.
The scribe grew uncomfortable.
I was in the Canton of Orthodoxy, as you may know, not the Canton of Inquisition.
Surely there were rumors, Elland asked.
Well, of course, Nurdin said. More than rumors, actually. The higher obligators were always trying to discover how the Inquisitors got their power. There was a rivalry between the cantons, you see, and... well, I suppose you don't care about that. Regardless, we did have rumors.
And? Elland asked.
They said... Norden began. They said that an Inquisitor was a fusion of many different people. In order to make an Inquisitor, the Canton of Inquisition had to get a whole group of Allomancers, then combine their powers into one.
Again, silence in the room. Vin pulled her legs up, wrapping her arms around her knees. She didn't like talking about Inquisitors.
"Lord Ruler," Ham swore quietly. "That's it. That's why the Inquisitors were so keen on hunting down Scar Mistings. Don't you see? It wasn't just because the Lord Ruler ordered half-breeds to be killed. It was so the Inquisitors could perpetuate themselves. They needed Allomancers to kill so they could make new Inquisitors."
Ellen nodded from his place at the front of the room.
"Somehow those spikes in the Inquisitors' bodies transfer Allomantic ability. You kill 8 Mistings, and you give all their powers to one other man, such as Marsh. Sazed once told me that Marsh was always hesitant to speak of the day he was made an Inquisitor, but he did say that it was messy."
Ham nodded.
"And when Kelsier and Vin found his room the day he was taken and made an Inquisitor, they found a corpse in there. One they initially assumed was Marsh."
"Later, Marsh said that more than one person had been killed there," Vin said quietly. "There just hadn't been enough left of them to tell."
"Again," Set said, "does this all have a point?"
"Well, it seems to be doing a good job of annoying you," Ham said lightly. "Do we need any other point?"
Ellen gave them both hard looks.
"The point is, Set, that Vin discovered something earlier this week."
The group turned toward her.
"Kolos," Vin said. "They're made from humans."
"What?" Set asked, frowning. "That's absurd."
"No," Vin said, shaking her head. "I'm sure of it. I've checked living Kolos. Hidden in those folds and rips of skin on their bodies, they are pierced by spikes. Smaller than the Inquisitor spikes, and made from different metals, but all of the Kolos have them."
"Nobody has been able to figure out where new Kolos come from," Ellen said. "The Lord Ruler guarded the secret, and it's become one of the great mysteries of our time. Kolos seem to kill each other with regularity when someone isn't actively controlling them, yet there always seem to be more of the creatures. How?"
"Because they are constantly replenishing their numbers," Ham said, nodding slowly. "From the villages they pillage."
"Did you ever wonder," Elend said, "back during the siege of Luthadel, while Jaste's Kolos army attacked a random village before coming for us? The creatures needed to replenish their numbers."
"They always walk about," Vin said, "wearing clothing, talking about being human. Yet they can't quite remember what it was like. Their minds have been broken."
Ellen nodded.
"The other day, Vin finally got one of them to show her how to make new Kolos. From what he did, and from what he's said since, we believe that he was going to try to combine 2 men into one. That would make a creature with the strength of 2 men, but the mind of neither."
"A third art," Ham said, looking up.
"A third way to use the metals. There is allomancy, which draws power from the metals themselves. There is ferrochemy, which uses metals to draw power from your own body. And there is..."
"Marsh called it hemallergy," Vin said quietly.
"Hemallergy," Ham said. "Which uses the metals to draw power from someone else's body."
"Great," Set said. "Point?"
"The Lord Ruler created servants to help him," Ellen said. "Using this art, this hemallergy, he made soldiers, which we call Kolos. He made spies, which we call Chondra. And he made priests, which we call Inquisitors. He built them all with weaknesses, so that he could control them."
"I first learned how to take control of the Kolos because of Tensun," Vin said. "He inadvertently showed me the secret. He mentioned that the Chondra and the Kolos were cousins, and I realized I could control one just as I had the other."
"I still don't see where you're heading with this," Demu said, glancing from Vin to Elend.
The Inquisitors must have the same weakness, Demu, Elend said. This hemallergy leaves the mind wounded. It allows an allomancer to creep in and take control. The nobility always wondered what made the Inquisitors so fanatically devoted to the Lord Ruler. They weren't like regular obligators. They were far more obedient, zealous to a fault.
It happened to Marsh, Vin whispered. The first time I met him after he'd been made an Inquisitor, he seemed different. But he only grew even odder during the year following the collapse. Finally he turned on Sazed, tried to kill him.
What we're trying to suggest, Elend said, is that something is controlling the Inquisitors and the Koloss. Something is exploiting the weakness the Lord Ruler built into the creatures, and is using them as its pawns. The troubles we've been suffering, the chaos following the collapse, it's not simply chaos. No more than the patterns of people who fall sick to the mists are chaotic. I know it seems obvious, but the important thing here is that we now know the method. We understand why they can be controlled, and how they're being controlled.
Elend continued to pace, his feet marking the dirty tent floor.
The more I think about Vin's discovery, the more I come to believe that this is all connected. The Koloss, the Chondra, and the Inquisitors are not three separate oddities, but part of a single cohesive phenomenon. Now on the surface, knowledge of this third art, this hemallergy, doesn't seem like much. We don't intend to use it to make more Koloss, so what good is the knowledge?
Set nodded, as if Elend had spoken the man's own thoughts. Elend, however, had drifted off a bit, staring out the open tent flaps, losing himself in thought. It was something he'd once done frequently, back when he spent more time on scholarship. He wasn't addressing Set's questions. He was speaking his own concerns, following his own logical path.
"This war we're fighting," Elend continued. "It isn't just about soldiers. It isn't just about Koloss or about taking Fadrick City. It's about the sequence of events we inadvertently started the moment we struck down the Lord Ruler. Hemallergy, the origins of the Koloss, is part of a pattern. The percentages that fall sick from the mists are also part of the pattern. The less we see chaos and the more we see the pattern, the better we're going to be at understanding just what we fight, and just how to defeat it."
Elend turned toward the group.
"Norden, I want you to change the focus of your research. Up until now we've assumed that the movements of the Koloss were random. I'm no longer convinced that is true. Research our old scout reports. Draw up lists and plot movements. Pay particular attention to the bodies of Koloss that we specifically know weren't under the control of an Inquisitor. I want to see if we can discover why they went where they did."
"Yes, my lord," Norden said.
"The rest of you stay vigilant," Elend said. "I don't want another mistake like last week's. We can't afford to lose any more troops, even Koloss."
They nodded, and Elend's posture indicated the end of the meeting. Set was carried away to his tent. Norden bustled off to begin this new research, and Ham went in search of something to eat. Demu, however, stayed. Vin stood and trailed forward, stepping up to Elend's side, taking his arm as he turned to address Demu.
"My lord," Demu said, looking a bit embarrassed. "I assume General Hammond has spoken to you?"
"What's this?" Vin thought, perking up.
"Yes, Demu," Elend said with a sigh. "But I really don't think it's something to worry about."
"What?" Vin asked.
"There is a certain level of ostracism happening in the camp, m'lady," Demu said. "Those of us who fell sick for 2 weeks rather than a few days are being regarded with a measure of suspicion."
"Suspicion that you no longer agree with, right, Demu?"
Elend punctuated this remark with a very kingly, stern look. Demu nodded.
"I trust your interpretation, my lord. It's just that, well, it is difficult to lead men who distrust you. And it's much harder for the others like me. They've taken to eating together, staying away from the others during their free time. It's reinforcing the division."
"What do you think?" Elend asked. "Should we try to force reintegration?"
That depends, my lord, the Moo said.
On?
On several factors, the Moo said. If you're planning to attack soon, then reintegrating would be a bad idea. I don't want men fighting alongside those they don't trust. However, if we're going to continue the siege for some time, then forcing them back together might make sense. The larger segment of the army would have time to learn to trust the Mistfallen again.
Mistfallen, Vin thought. Interesting name.
Ellen looked down at her, and she knew what he was thinking. The ball at the Canton of Resource was only a few days away. If Ellen's plan went well, then perhaps they wouldn't have to attack Fadrix. Vin didn't have great hopes for that option. Plus, without resupply from Luthadel, they couldn't count on much anymore. They could continue the siege as planned for months, or they might end up having to attack within a few weeks.
"Organize a new company," Ellen said, turning to Demu. "Fill it with these Mistfallen. We'll worry about dealing with superstition after we hold Fadrix."
"Yes, my lord," Demu said. "I think that..."
They continued talking, but Vin stopped paying attention as she heard voices approaching the command tent. It was probably nothing. Even so, she moved around so that she was between the approaching people and Ellen, then checked her metal reserves. Within moments, she could determine who was talking. One was Ham. She relaxed as the tent flap opened, revealing Ham in his standard vest and trousers, leading a wearied, red-haired soldier. The exhausted man had ash-stained clothing and wore the leathers of a scout.
"Conrad?" Demu asked with surprise.
"You know this man?" Ellen asked.
"Yes, my lord," Demu said. "He's one of the lieutenants I left back in Luthadel with King Penrod."
Conrad saluted, though he looked rather the worse for the wear.
"My lord," the man said, "I bring news from the capital."
"Finally," Ellen said. "What word from Penrod? Where are those supply barges I sent for?"
"Supply barges, my lord?" Conrad asked.
"My lord, King Penrod sent me to ask you for resupply. There are riots in the city, and some of the food stores have been pillaged. King Penrod sent me to ask you for a contingent of troops to help him restore order."
"Troops?" Ellen asked. "What of the garrison I left with him? He should have plenty of men."
"They're not enough, my lord," Conrad said. "I don't know why. I can only relay the message I was sent to deliver."
Ellen cursed, slamming his fist against the command tent's table.
"Can Penrod not do the one thing I asked of him? All he needed to do was hold lands we already have secure."
The soldier jumped at the outburst, and Vin watched with concern. Ellen, however, managed to keep his temper under control. He took a deep breath, waving to the soldier.
"Rest yourself, Lieutenant Conrad, and get some food. I will want to speak with you further about this later."
Vin found Ellen later that night, standing on the perimeter of the camp, looking up at the Fadrix watchfires on the cliffs above. She laid a hand on his shoulder, and the fact that he didn't jump indicated that he'd heard her coming. It was still a little strange to her that Ellen, who had always seemed slightly oblivious of the world around him, was now a capable mistborn with tin to enhance his ears that let him hear even the softest footsteps approaching.
"You talked to the messenger?" she asked as he put his arm around her, still looking up at the night sky.
Ash fell all around them. A couple of Ellen's soldier tin eyes passed on patrol, carrying no lights, silently walking the perimeter of the camp. Vin herself had just gotten back from a similar patrol, though hers had been around the perimeter of Fadrix. She did a couple of rounds every night, watching the city for unusual activity.
"Yes," Ellen said. Once he'd had some rest, I spoke to him in depth.
"Bad news?"
"Much of what he said before. Penrod apparently never got my orders to send food and troops. Conrad was one of four messengers Penrod sent to us. We don't know what happened to the other three. Conrad himself was chased by a group of Kolos, and he only got away by baiting them with his horse, sending it in one direction and hiding as they chased it down and butchered it. He slipped away while they were feasting."
"Brave man," Vin said.
Lucky as well, Elend said. Either way, it seems unlikely that Penrod will be able to send us support. There are food stores in Luthadel, but if the news of riots is true, Penrod won't be able to spare the soldiers it would take to guard supplies on their way to us.
So, where does that leave us? Vin asked.
Elend looked at her, and she was surprised to see determination in his eyes, not frustration. With knowledge.
What?
Our enemy has exposed himself, Vin, attacking our messengers directly with hidden pockets of Kolos, trying to undermine our supply base in Luthadel. Elend shook his head. Our enemy wants this to look random, but I see the pattern. It's too focused, too intelligent, to be happenstance. He's trying to make us pull away from Fadrix. Vin felt a chill. Elend made to say more, but she reached up and laid a hand on his lips, quieting him. He seemed confused, but then apparently understood, for he nodded.
Whatever we say, Ruin can hear, Vin thought. We can't give away what we know.
Still, something passed between them. A knowledge that they had to stay at Fadrix, that they had to find out what was in that storage cavern. For their enemy was working hard to keep them from doing so. Was Ruin indeed behind the chaos in Luthadel? A ploy to draw Elend and his forces back to restore order, thereby abandoning Fadrix? It was only speculation, but it was all they had. Vin nodded to Elend, indicating that she agreed with his determination to stay. Still, she worried. Luthadel was to have been their rock in all of this, their secure position. If it was falling apart, what did they have? More and more she was beginning to understand that there would be no falling back. No retreat to develop alternative plans. The world was collapsing around them, and Elend had committed himself to Fadrix. If they failed here, there would be nowhere else to go. Eventually, Elend squeezed her shoulder, then walked off into the mists to check on some of the guard posts. Vin remained alone, staring up at those watchfires, feeling a worrisome sense of foreboding. Her thoughts from before, in the fourth storage cavern, returned to her. Fighting wars, besieging cities, playing at politics, it wasn't enough. These things wouldn't save them if the very land itself died. But what else could they do? The only option they had was to take Fadrix and hope the Lord Ruler had left them some clue to help. She still felt an inexplicable desire to find the Atium. Why was she so certain it would help? She closed her eyes, not wanting to face the mists, which, as always, pulled away from her, leaving a half inch or so of empty air around her. She'd drawn upon them once, back when she'd fought the Lord Ruler. Why had she been able to fuel her allomancy with their power that one time? She reached out to them, trying again, as she had so many times. She called to them, pleaded with them in her mind, tried to access their power. And she felt as if she should be able to. There was a strength to the mists, trapped within them. But it wouldn't yield to her. It was as if something kept them back. Some blockage, perhaps? Or maybe a simple whim on their part?
Why, she whispered, eyes still closed. Why help me that once, but never again? Am I mad? Or did you really give me power when I demanded it?
The night gave her no answers. Finally, she sighed and turned away, seeking refuge inside of the tent.